The children of admired, famous people can have a tough time becoming their own person, despite even because of all their advantages. What does life hold for the sons and daughters of tyrants and dictators whose very names become synonyms for evil? Does the name they bear sentence them in a way, too? Jay Nordlinger, a senior editor at National Review and music critic of the New Criterion, has written a book in which he tries to trace what's happened to the succeeding generation of some of the most infamous names of history, the Stalins, Gaddafis, Maos, and Pol Pots. His new book, Children of Monsters, an inquiry into the sons and daughters of dictators. Jay Nordlinger joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you.
To take up the most odious name first, there is a man who claims to be the son of Adolf Hitler. You and most historians are skeptical. He does look a little like him.
More than a little. Yeah.
Grew a mustache, and you're intrigued by the fact that anybody would want to claim Hitler as their father.
That's right. For my book, the question of paternity is not the most important question, and he probably was not the son of Hitler. He's dead now. He was a Frenchman named Jean-Marie Loret. The question for me is this. He believed himself to be the son of Hitler. What effect did that have on him? And the answer is pretty bad. He wasn't a stable human being, is my impression. And in the end, after first resisting the idea that he was Hitler's son, he embraced it and, I'm sad to say, was proud of it.
There are lots of Mussolinis. Let me ask you about one by cueing some music. This is a Mussolini. This is Romano Mussolini. And in fact, he's a jazz musician who played with Duke Ellington. He played with Dizzy Gillespie, married Sophia Loren's sister.
Yeah.
He was 17 at the end of the war when his father died. And I gather never talked about his father much until his later years. And what did he say?
Well, he was defensive of his father, one of those keepers of a dictator's flame. In fact, the last time Romano saw his father, Romano was picking out tunes from The Merry Widow on the piano, and Mussolini said, "Keep playing, Romano," and he did. For a while, he did play under a different name. He called himself Romano Full, F-U-L-L, but then he discovered that Mussolini was more of a draw than a repellent, so ever after, he was Romano Mussolini.
You also have some regard for one of Muammar Gaddafi's sons, Saif.
Saif, yes, there were two sons of a Gaddafi named Saif. This is Saif al-Islam we're speaking of. And he tried to go straight, so to speak. He wanted to be a Western-style liberal or an Arab reformer. He went to the London School of Economics. He almost made it. But when the Civil War came and the family dictatorship was under threat, he returned home. He fought for the dictatorship and now is wanted by The Hague. I think the ties of blood, the ties of father and dictatorship proved in the end too strong.
We tell ourselves as parents that we put good things into our children, they will reflect them, they will begin to embody them, which raises the question as to whether one of the world's monsters can ever be a successful parent.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Very few of these kids emerged unscathed. They're all marked in a way. I admire the ones who can find their own way and live decently. Ceausescu in Romania had two sons. One was a perfect little monster who raped and tortured and murdered his way through Romania all of his short life. And the other son, Valentin, who is alive today, has lived blamelessly as far as I can tell. He's a physicist. For decades he's worked at an institute. And as far as I know, he's never harmed a hair on anyone's head. So where does that leave us with nature nurture?
Jay Nordlinger, his new book, Children of Monsters, an inquiry into the sons and daughters of dictators. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you.